So we'll discuss some Inyane Eretz Yisrael, as it's always appropriate, but this past week was Yom HaAtzmaut, Israel Independence Day, so we'll speak about some Eretz Yisrael, some Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. In fact, it ties into Sfira as well, because that's the Rambam Shita. As we mentioned, the Rambam Shita is Sfira Sa'omer, even Bizman Hazeh is a mitzvah min HaTorah. And at first glance, it seems to be, and Rov Rishonim, as we mentioned, disagree. The issue at first glance seems to be that whether the mitzvah of Sfira Sa'omer and Karban Omer, are they one mitzvah, are they connected, or are they independent? So if they're connected, so we don't have a Karban Omer anymore, so therefore Sfira is only Drabbanan. And Pashas, the Rambam, who holds Sfira Sa'omer as Daraisa today, must hold that Sfira is independent of the Karban. That's what one would say. However, the problem is, the Rambam, when he talks about the laws of Sfira Sa'omer, talks about in Hilchas Tamidin Umusafim. He talks about it in Hilchas Karbanos. So the question is, so obviously the Rambam holds that Sfira is linked to Karban, and he still says it's Daraisa. So how can it be? We said if it's independent, we understand why it's Daraisa. If it's linked to the Karban, we understand why it's Darabanan. How could the Rambam say it's linked to the Karban and still be Daraisa? So that's a famous shtickle from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. He points out that based, because the Gemara in Menachas Samakvav seems to say Sfira Sa'omer is only a Zechul HaMikdash, and Pashas, everyone holds it's Darabanan. So how could the Rambam go against the Gemara? So Rav Chaim explains, really it's a machlokas hasugyas. Really this Gemara Menachas isn't a libid dehilchos. So we have a famous machlokas, we have many disputes, but one regarding Kedushas HaMikdash. There's a discussion, there's the one machlokas regarding Kedushas HaAretz. That'll be another shiur in terms of the mitzvahs HaTluyus BaAretz, Bizman Bayis Sheni, Bayis Rishon, in terms of that. But there's another machlokas, Kedushas HaMikdash. Whether today, even though we no longer have a Beis HaMikdash, does the Kedusha remain? So everyone agrees, I'll get to in a second, but so the Rambam writes, the Kedushas HaMikdash applies even Mizman HaZeh, because HaShchina Eino B'Tela. You can knock down the walls, but you can't take away the Divine Presence. And the Ravid doesn't actually say there's no Kedusha, all he says is this Ein Lo Kares. There's no Kares today, and some assume that the Ravid says it's Mutter. So that's a discussion what exactly the Ravid's Ashita is. But the Rambam clearly holds the Kedushas HaMikdash applies today as well as it did during time of the Beis HaMikdash. Perhaps I make a distinction that if according to the Rambam that the Kedushas HaMikdash applies today, so maybe you have a Chiyuv to bring a Karban. So we'll see that even though Makriva Afal Pi She'ein Lo Bayis, maybe that's only a Rishus, not a Chova. But either way, the Rambam writes that Sfira Sa'omer is the Raisa today and he connects it to the Karban Omer. So how could that be? So Rav Chaim explains this because since we pass in Kedushas HaMikdash applies even Mizman HaZeh. So really in theory, one can bring Karbanos even Mizman HaZeh. One can bring a Karban. Why don't we? Because we don't have the Big Day Kohuna. We don't know exactly where the Makam of Mizbeach is, Kohanim HaTmeyim, many different technical factors. But fundamentally, we could bring a Karban today. So the Rav Chaim writes, what was the halacha Bizman Beis HaMikdash Chayim? We counted Sfira at night. That's what Tamimas Tiena means. Bahaga is his own Kiddush. But Tamimas Tiena means you count at night. You need a full day. So you counted Sfira at night, and you brought the Karban Omer the next morning. So even when we brought a Karban, the counting wasn't dependent on the Karban Bepoel. It wasn't dependent on one physically bringing the Karban, because we actually counted before we even brought the Karban. So what's the mitzvah of Sfira Daraisa? You count the night of Sfira on the condition or in theory that you're going to bring the Karban, you count now, thinking you're going to bring the Karban tomorrow morning. So too now. In The Rambam holds one can bring karbanas today. So when we count Tzvira, yeah. We have a mitzvah to bring karbanas today. Tomorrow morning I can't bring one. That's a technical problem, not a fundamental problem. And therefore, that's what the Rav Chaim says in the Rambam, that the Kedushas HaMikdash applies even Bizman HaZeh, and that's how the Rambam could hold it's linked to the Karban Omer and still be a Din Daraisa. Let me just point out, according the whole discussion between the Rambam and Rav is regarding the Kedushas of Eretz Yisrael. You know, then we have a machlokes, whether the Kedusha applies to Zman HaZeh, true Maisa Drabanan, that's one thing. But there's another aspect that's what the Briskas call, others call, the Shame Eretz Yisrael. There's one, the certain mitzvahs which are totally in the Kedusha Saaretz, but even independently of that, even if you assume right now there's no Kedusha HaMikdash, there's no Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael is holy anyway. Because it has a shame Eretz Yisrael. It was the land of the Avos that the Avram came in and the land. The fact that it's our homeland, that by itself gives it. And that's what the Rishonim talk about in the beginning of Gittin also, that even though there might not be, and perhaps that's a discussion, there's the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Does it depend on the shame Eretz Yisrael? Does it depend on the Kedushas Eretz? That's why the Gemara in Sota, Moshe was a mitzvah. Moshe had stress, he wanted to go to fulfill the mitzvahs of Tluyas Ba'aretz. And why? I mean, why did he want to go? He wanted to fulfill the mitzvahs of Tluyas Ba'aretz. So we see that the reason why, so that's a discussion. So why didn't the Gemara say he wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? So that's a discussion the Rishonim, Achronim, how you learned that Gemara in terms of, was that a given? Of course he wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, but in addition, he wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of Torah Zvaretz. So that's a discussion there. That's where the Ritva, in the beginning of Gittin, they get into the different parts of Eretz Yisrael. So there might be a shame Eretz Yisrael without a Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is holy, even if it doesn't have a Kedushas. It's something special. You can't say the Makam HaMikdash is like any other place in the world. Even if you assume not like the Rambam. Even if you assume Kedushas HaMikdash is Bato, you still can't say, and you can't say Eretz Yisrael, even if there is no Kedusha now, you can't say Eretz Yisrael is like any other land, it's a special land as well. So this gives us a chance to speak about Eretz Yisrael. So I was asked to speak about the significance of the Israeli flag. So actually, I saw in the Nefesh HaRav, that's Rav Shechter Sefer, when he wrote about the Rav, I'm not sure what number it is, the first one, second, there are a couple out now, maybe even three. So in one of his shtickles, Rav Shechter writes that when the Rav was, I guess, giving shir to a Mizrahi crowd, maybe it was in Mariah, where she gave shir all the time, all over, and one of the people asked Rav Soloveitchik, is there any halachic significance to the Israeli flag? Is that a new Zionistic thing? Is that a new thing that started, I don't know if it was, if they had it in 1948, but whenever the flag actually began, is that a new thing? Or does that have something that there's some, you know, halachic significance that we could trace back further? So first, the Rav answers by saying the only time we find the golem, the only time we find flags in the Torah, that's in the beginning of Parashas Bamidbar, the Golem, and that was what we call a Horasha. That was a mitzvah for the certain time period for the Jews who traveled in the desert. They had to know where to go, on what part of the ark, on what side they were on. It was a special law for the Dor HaMidbar, like the halacha of collecting the booty from Mitzrayim. It was a special halacha for the Jews in Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf. Those are Horashas, a specific time period. So the Golem, there's no significance with Doros. That was only a special din. It was much more, it might have been a level of Kedusha to it, but it was much more pragmatic. They had to know where to stand, but that's it. But we don't find anywhere else the Golem. So is there no significance to the flag? So Rav Soloveitchik wanted to suggest perhaps there still is a significance to the flag. and he wanted to compare it to the following halacha. There's halacha in Judaism, in many religions, but there's halacha in Judaism of burial. Kavar tikbareno bayomahu. Tell Jason the double lashon. Kavar tikbareno bayomahu. That you have to be buried, and we have to be buried on the same day. And that's why in Eretz in Yerushalayim, you have to be buried, you can't leave a body overnight, the special Kedusha of Yerushalayim, etc. And in general, we try to bury someone as quickly as possible. With one exception, it's all about Kavod Ameis. So if the family is far away, it's going to take them a little while to get here. So if they're on vacation in Hawaii and they say they're not going to be back for a month, we don't wait for them. But if they're going to travel back, they have to come from Israel, it's going to take a day. They have two, you know, different communities have different minhagim. How far you have to wait. You always have to balance bizoy ha-meis when you're degrading the meis to cover that the family is coming. And therefore the Mishnah tells us in Sanhedrin, as kavod ha-meis, one could push off the burial until the family gets there. So we believe in burial. And the halacha is, every Jew is the same. Whether you're a millionaire, a billionaire, you're afflicted with poverty, everyone gets the same burial. You get buried in the same tachrichim. You get buried in the same shrouds. In contrast to other religions where they have wakes, where people get dressed up. In Judaism, we want you to remember the person when they're in the vitality, when they were living, when they were doing mitzvahs, not going around, you know, observing them, putting stuff on them, and keeping them, and observing them. We don't view the dead after the, we don't view the mace after the dead. You know, maybe a family member just came back, they want a last minute to see, but in general, once we put the body away, we don't usually let anyone see it anymore. So tachrichim, and I'm often asked, what about, which coffin should I use, Rabbi? Like, should I, you know, I'll honor to my parents, the funeral home wants to sell me the $30,000 coffin. Or is there any, should I get the $2,000 coffin? I'm making up prices, whatever they might be. And I tell them, like I said, really, Judaism says no coffins. Really, the Jewish view, as they do in Israel today, is you bury them, tachrichim, right into the ground. Because the quicker the body decomposes, the quicker the atonement. And therefore, you go directly in the ground, you'll get you'll decompose quicker. Because of Minig North America, North American law, Dina Machusadina, we have no choice. Again, it's not against halacha. In other words, as Ramban writes, you are allowed to bury someone in a coffin in the ground. You can't just bury someone in a coffin and leave them on top of the ground. But if you take the coffin and you put him in the ground, that's also considered halachically burial. And that's why Alaminig is, we take some earth from Eretz Yisrael, we put it into the coffin, or we make holes on bottom in the coffin and try to fulfill from earth to earth, from, you know, from offer to offer. And therefore, I tell them, you don't have to spend $30,000, you buy the simple wooden coffin. In fact, you shouldn't be taking a metal coffin because metal doesn't decompose, or if it does, it takes a lot longer. And we want the body to decompose. You take the simple pine coffin, and therefore, that's giving cover to your family, your family member. These are decomposed quicker, and his atonement will be quicker as well. So, whether it's burial in the coffin or it's tachrichim, all the tachrichim are the same. There's one exception to the rule when we don't bury someone in a coffin, in tachrichim, in shrouds. And there's a, it's halacha born in Shulchan Aruch. I haven't actually checked with Chevra Kaddishas whether that's still the minhag today. I'm assuming it is, but I like verifying it, usually like speaking to the people who actually do it and see what it is. But there's halacha that someone who is murdered and they have the blood-stained clothing all over, so instead of, you do not put him in tachrichim, you bury him the way he is. You know, you do, obviously you make other preparations for the burial, but you don't put the shrouds on, you bury him with the blood stain. And the concept being is, we want him a ore rachamei Hashem. We want to stir up God's mercy, that Hashem kind of nimkom dam of Hashem will revenge the blood, the one who did it, the anti-Semites, whoever, And I'm assuming, I'm just thinking a lot, what about all the bomb victims in Israel? Like those, you know, obviously if there's nothing left of them, I mean, but in terms of if, or those who are killed, you know, and then they have, so I'm not sure if that's the minhag or not, could be. And then in terms of that, and that's the, but that's what the halacha brought down in Shulchan Aruch, that you wanna make more rachamim. In fact, I heard, I haven't seen it inside, but I read in Rabbi Blech, he used to teach with me at YU and in the JSS program. I don't know if you know him or not. And he wrote a couple of books. He wrote, you know, Svarim, and I think one was Deed versus Creed. He has a lot of different books, and one he put out, I think, one of the idiot guides on Judaism. So actually, I think I was reading it about Yoma, about Holocaust, about the, you know, something on the Holocaust. I was looking up stuff for Yom HaShoah, and he has in one of these footnotes, he doesn't give a source, but he writes, I'm quoting him, that someone asked, that I guess someone asked Rav Moshe, can, I guess somehow this person went through Auschwitz or maybe one of these concentration camps, they survived, and then they asked to be buried in the, instead of the Tachrichim, they wanted to be buried in their, whatever, the, you know, their Auschwitz uniform. And apparently, again, this is all I'm reading in this book, and apparently Rav Moshe said it was okay. So apparently, you know, so can the person, you know, so it's the same type, assuming it's true, that it's the same type of thing, that you want him over, that basically, that he's paskening, that, you know, kind of like, I already went through type of Gehenna already, you know, and also I guess it's the same concept being taken a come on the Nazis and all the anti-Semites, the same type of concept, you know, so it's not, we do have cases where you are not buried in Tachrichim, even though this isn't exactly the case we're normally talking about is when you actually kill B'Shas Maisa. Here it's the same concept of being Ma'orir, you know, so it's not so apparently, according to this, you know, Rav Moshe said it was okay. So either way, but whether it happened or not, it just reminds me of the same concept that we do think we want God to Mo'er Rachman. So that's the halacha. So that's the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. If someone is murdered, you bury them with the blood on their clothes in order to stir up Rachman Hashem. So Rav Soloveitchik said, this is the concept of the flag, he thinks. And I guess in 1948, right before they were giving us the land, so I guess there was a time, I'm out of bucky in this, but this is what it seemed to say in Nefesh HaRav, that I guess the last couple of hours, it was wherever, as much as they could, so to speak, put the flags down, I don't think it was literally they had Israeli flags yet, but wherever they, as much ground as they could get, that's how long, that's what the borders of Eretz Yisrael were going to be. You know, wherever you could take over by whatever the time was, and this day, this time, that's how much you're going to get. So obviously when they heard that, the Jewish soldiers, Jewish people went ahead and they tried to conquer more land. And of course, they were fighting the Arabs. And obviously, Jews were killed during this time. And Jews were they were killed even after, you know, the moment they announced the state. But therefore, the Rebbe of Soloveitchik says, the flag represents the mysterious nefesh of all those Jews during that time who tried to put, so to speak, the flag down, try to enlarge the boundaries of Eretz Israel from that point, you know, from the British, from the UN point of view, and that's what the flag represents. All the Jewish lives that sacrificed for the land of Israel, therefore, you know, it takes on a certain same level of you know, maybe Tashmishe Kedusha. Of course, I don't think the Rav takes it so far that if Israeli flag rips, you bury it in the caravan. I don't think he meant it that way. You know, again, it's a machshava statement. You know, and I'm reading from Nefesh HaRav, so I don't think he took. But the concept that even though, so basically, what the way I'm understanding it anyway is that basically, pi halacha, obviously, there's no halachic significance to having a flag. I mean, it might be national value and everyone has, but in terms, but he thinks in terms of Makshava, it does, there, it, oh, he, there might not be, you know, real halach, but in terms of makshav, it takes on a certain, whether it's halachic significance or hashkafic significance, that the flag isn't meaningless, but that when we have the flag up, it shows the mesiras nefesh of all the men, women, and children who have given up their lives, that we can, and they continue to give up their lives, for us to have Eretz Yisrael. So in that sense, the flag has meaning. If every time you look at the flag and you see all the mesiras nefesh of all the Jews from even well before, but from even 1949, then the flag takes on a certain type of significance. And in fact, that's why as well, that's why Rav Salavation explained as well, not in this shtickle, but I heard them in his name, the same concept. That's why we have Yom HaZikaron right before Yom HaAtzmaut. Why do we have Remembrance Day? Remembering the soldiers and all the civilians, everyone who's given up their life for Eretz Yisrael. It's a very big event in Eretz Yisrael, but we have something here as well. And then the next day, we go into Yom HaAtzmaut. Why do we have to mix the two celebrations? Or not two celebrations, why do we have to mix the Remembrance Day with the Happy Day? Let's separate the two. Let's make Yom HaZikaron, pick another day, you know, a couple of months from now, and then pick Yom HaAtzmaut. Why are the two linked together? So Rav Salavation explained, because we know in Judaism, and I'm just elaborating on it, is we know the power of contrast. To fully appreciate anything in life, you have to know the opposite. To fully appreciate light, you have to know what darkness is. To fully appreciate eyesight, we appreciate eyesight as much as we can, but someone who was once blind and now could see, it takes on a totally different significance of someone who couldn't walk, now they can walk. Someone who went through Machas Choshech, or someone was in the hole in Alcatraz and it was real dark and you couldn't see anything, you walk out, it's a totally different appreciation. And that's what, in fact, we just celebrated Pesach not too long ago. So that's what Rav, the Machok is Rav and Shmuel, but the Gemara says, Matkal Begunus, everyone agrees to the principle. They argue, what is the Gunus? But Matkal Begunus, we see in Mishav, you begin with the shame of the Jewish people. It's the Machok is Rav and Shmuel, whether the shame is Avadim Hayinu, or Mitzchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and then you go into Vayotzeinu Hashem, we go into the Cheiros. So the question is, why it's a night of our freedom? Why just get right to the good stuff? Why are we talking? So again, to fully appreciate being free, you got to know what a slave is. And so too, Rav Salavation said here, to fully appreciate what Eretz Yisrael is, like anything else in life, you have to fully appreciate what you gave up for. And that's why specifically we have to. We need a Yom HaZikaron, we need a day to appreciate all what the soldiers, and not just the soldiers, all the Jewish people, anyone who's lived in Eretz Yisrael, this being there, and those many civilians who have given their life, many pre-1948, they went ahead and they fought, etc. So to fully appreciate what Eretz Yisrael is, as always, we have to know what we've given up. And hence, first Yom HaZikaron, and then Yom HaAtzmaut. So there's a whole halachic discussion in terms of whether one says Hallel on Yom HaAtzmaut. That's not my topic tonight. And therefore you have, obviously, whether you're going to say Hallel on Yom HaAtzmaut is going to depend on how you view having the State of Israel. So obviously, if you hold the State of Israel as a negative thing, like the Satmar Shita, then obviously the question is, you're going to say Slichos on that, not if you're going to say Hallel. So obviously, you have to assume, again, and people confuse the Satmar Shita with, let's say, the Neturei Karta, the wackos who put on full page ads in the New York Times, either burning flags or joining in with the Palestinians, or those people went to Iran to join the denial of the Holocaust, even though they themselves weren't denying the Holocaust, but they could go to associate with them. You know, they did it for the, apparently they got $1 million for showing up. Of course, he used them for the pictures. But the bottom line is, you come together with the modern day come on Hitler, obviously, that's out of the pale. That's not the Turi Karta, meaning that's not real in the Turing Hartza. It might be those people are out of the pale of Judaism. That's not an accepted shita. Satmar is an accepted shita. Might not be my shita, but the Divrei Yoel, which Teitelbaum is a super genius Talmud Chacham, he wrote a whole shtickle on why he thinks it is. So he's entitled. He's a Talmud Chacham. He's entitled to his opinion, and the Satmar Chassidim should follow the Rebbe, and there's no reason not to. And obviously, you have the Rav Kook shita that is. It's more at times the Messianic age, it's the Schalta de Geula, and that's why you have the Tzvilas of Medina Ratius Mikulasena, it's the beginning of the Geula. So certainly, obviously, they're going to say it's a day, it's a happy day, and then you can get into it. So it's a halachic discussion in terms of whether you say Hallel at all, do you say a half a Hallel, do you say a full Hallel, do you say Hallel with a bracha, and then, you know, that's a discussion among Talmidei Chachamim, and there's room within all those shitas within halacha. Some are more minority views, some are more standard. But any, you know, the point being is those are all. So my point is wherever your view is on whether you're. See, a lot of people get caught up in technicalities. Do you say hallel or do you do that? The point is everyone could. The point is for me is anyway. It's not whether you say hallel or you don't say hallel. That's a halacha question. Speak to your rav. And you could be the biggest Ohev Tzion and not say Hallel. You know, a lot of times, the more Tzion you are, it might lead to saying Hallel, but they don't necessarily go hand in hand. I mean, you know, the Rav Soloveitchik was very against saying Hallel, not saying Hallel at all. He was against the whole Misa, the way I heard it, and I saw it in thinking aloud. You know, so people might have different versions of what Rav Soloveitchik says, but I heard it independent, and I read it again. I think he was in a minion and morgue during my day. They probably still have a minion daily there. It's the one in the dormitories. And Rav Soloveitchik used to live in the room right over there, right next door. So apparently it was a B'nai Akiva minion he went into. And I guess he went over and told them, you know, don't say, I don't know if they asked him, they didn't ask him. And he told them not to say Hallel with a bracha, something like that. And they went ahead and did it, and then I don't know if he stayed in, and he stormed out. Either way, when he came to share that day, he gave a whole long discussion in terms, and he went to, you know, at least the way it's quoted in the Sefer, and the way I heard it, I'm sure people might have different versions of what, you know, maybe he said different things at different times, but the way he says it in thinking aloud is that he wasn't against full Hallel with the bracha. He says, you need a takana, you know, again, this gets in. I mean, we give a whole shiur on it. It's really the way he said he's learning like the Netziv, the heel, because really it comes out, it's a machokas kasim sofer in the Netziv on whether saying Hallel on the anniversary of a miracle is that a deraisa drabanan. So if it's a deraisa, I don't need a takan, I don't need someone to come along and tell me to put on tefillin tomorrow morning. If I have a chi of the, so if your whole life, the irony is, if you take the Chasim Sofer Shita, which the Hungarians who were anti, you know, they're more anti-Zionist, and but if you take you have to follow the Chasim Sofer Shita to say Hallel with the Bracha today, and if you take the Netziv Shita, they would come out, you know, that you need it. So the Rav seemed to be working with the Netziv. He says you need a Takana, we don't have, so he says, I'd be okay with the Chatzi Hallel, no Bracha, at least say a Kaddish, after Shmoneh Esrei to show it's not Petorah. So, you know, so either way, the point being is so how is halachic dispute? But the point, recognize, again, if you assume Eretz is, the fact that we have Eretz on the Jewish control, if you assume it's a good thing, then recognize it's a special day today. You know, whether Rav Kook, you want to say it's Ischalta de Geula, Reishis Mikhlaseinu, that you have a right to follow that Shita. The Rav Nesrei had, you know, at least or minimally, like the Rav thought that it's definitely a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So many miracles happen. We have to recognize the Chasdei Hashem. And that's why you don't have to, like, there's a discussion, like, not, I think someone once told me that he said, well, you know, he considered himself, whatever, modern, whatever, but he went to speaking to Rabbi Norman Lamb, and he said, but I don't feel like comfortable saying in the Tzvila, Reishis Mikhlaseinu. And I think Rav Lamb said, I don't say it either. I said, who am I? You know, you have to be a Navi today. You know, how do I know it's the beginning? I think it's a good thing. But to say something, again, I'm not saying you can't say it, I'm just saying that's what, so you could discuss saying it, and then, and again, you could discuss saying the Tefillah Medina, you know, again, you say, you don't say it, speak to your posik, your rub, and you come to your conclusions. You have to be tolerant of both sides. And again, so then, and then even those and say, then there's a Misha Berach to say for the Chalei Tzahal, even today. So then you'll have those who won't say the Tefillah HaMedina, but they will say the Bracha for the, you know, which to me, I don't understand why you don't say. I mean, they say it's Palat, they say it's Tzahal. I wasn't having a discussion with them directly, but I was listening to someone having a discussion with someone, and they were saying, and he was asking, what about Hakara Satov? What about, he says that it's, the Tzahal is a political thing, and he doesn't want to recognize it. As for an individual person, you know, like he'll say, if he wouldn't say, I'm saying, so either way, you know, again, but I think you can make a distinction between, so there are those who'll say the Misha Berach, but you know, so again, so those are different, but people get caught up in the technical details and lose the big picture. So whether you say, you know, if there's a lachak issue, you're not saying it, so you follow your Rebbe, I'll follow mine. So I can't argue, you know, you could sit there arguing over the lacha, but it's not, you know, like the two, that's not really the issue. The issue is that the point is that everyone has to be tolerant of the other sheet. In fact, that's why some like to say, so Yom HaAtzmaut is specifically during Sfiras HaOmer. During Sfiras HaOmer, the time with Rabbi Akiva's students, Shogogo Nagu covered Zelazeh, that's the time we have to learn the lesson. And Dafka, be tolerant for the one, you know, the person who's saying Slichus on Yom HaAtzmaut should be able to be best friends with the person saying someone with a bracha with Hallel and Yom HaAtzmaut, but the two independent points. You know, whatever your sheet is, but I mean, but those who hold that Eretz is a good thing, at least recognize it's a Chaste Hashem. Okay, so no Hallel, or however you want to give a share in on Kedushas Eretz Israel today, however you want. I'm not telling you how you should feel, but there should be, since it's be a regular day, it should be something recognized, however you want to do it, within, you want to be sensitive to the laws of Sphere. However, whatever your halachic issues are, fine, but I'm sure we could find a way where, if assuming you want to, if you're just saying you really want to, but and Sphere is an excuse, then okay, so then there's nothing to talk about, but those who feel they really want to do it, so there are ways of working it out. And that's what they, and that's what we see, that's why Yom HaZikaron first, but, and then there's the point, either way, whether you want to observe Yom HaZikaron or not, the point is, we should have appreciation for everyone, any Jew or anyone who gives up their life anytime for the sake of Klal Yisrael, for the sake of protecting Eretz Yisrael. All the Torah going on now in Eretz Yisrael is because obviously we can't forget HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but as always we have to make a shtaglus. I mean, we have to thank, someone does me a favor, I don't say, well, okay, I'm not going to thank you, I'm going to thank God. Of course it came from God, you might have been a shriach, but you still have to thank the person who did you the chesed. So if someone's protecting the land of Eretz Yisrael for me, or even the land of America, whatever it may be, you still have to have Akara Zatov. And that's what Bereshit, that's at the beginning, that's how the Torah began, that the whole world was based on Reishis, on Bikurim, that the whole concept of Akara Zatov. And we have to give Akara Zatov ourselves, as the Avidrum points out, the only, we know we have a concept for the Eino Baki that he could rely on the Shriach Sibor. And for the Eino Baki, he could rely on the Shriach Sibor and listen to the davening. But for us, we don't. However, we do have Chazaras Hashatz. Chazaras Hashatz, the Shriach Sibor leads. However, there's one thing we have to do on our own. When it comes to Akara Satov, saying thank you, don't send the shliach, you got to do it yourself. And that's why when anything in life, we have to have, you know, we have to have Akara Satov, and we need the gratitude for the people who are sacrificing. That's what Rav Salavashik is saying, that's the concept, you know, on a level of Makshava, there's no halachic significance, you don't have to go bury the flag or any of that, but the concept that it represents all the Jewish blood, like the Tachrichim, all those who've given up their lives. And regarding why it's blue, so some say because it's Zeche Lelot HaTecheles. Techeles is a whole discussion today, that will be a separate shiur we'll have to get into in terms of wearing the Techeles today as I mentioned, you have different extremes on that shita, that perhaps you chayev to wear the tchelas today versus there's a 0% chance that, you know, that it is tchelas today. But that's an interesting discussion in its own right, losing a mitzvah for a certain point and then restoring an old mitzvah. How does that work exactly? I'm more interested in that issue than I am the specific tchelas, but tchelas is his own shia, but tchelas will be a springboard for that. So either way, so tchelas is blue because the blue is doma l'rakia, and therefore the blue represents, like Moshe Rabbeinu, you put the rock up during the war, you put your eyes up to heaven. The blue is supposed to remind us of the sky, and the sky is doma, and then we think of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's only because the gift of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Chasdei Hashem, he gave us the land. And Rav Moshe, I think, has a discussion about the Star of David in general. I think the first, because we find the Star of David, he said the Star of David on the Israeli flag, that could be just a new thing they just put on it. But the Star of David itself, we find in many shuls, like it's all over the place. It's like Kodesh Kadoshim, like the Star of David. In fact, it was funny because somebody asked me like about a month ago, a non-Jewish person, what's the significance of the Star of David? You know, so I just made up something anyway, but then I went out and I saw Baruch Shekivanti to Rav Moshe. I made up what Rav Moshe said, but I will get to that in a minute. But it goes back to, I think, the 11th century. They talk about the Star of David. Interesting, some say Bar Kochva. It was the star, some say it was a six-sided star. I said that was the armor they used during the Bar Kochva rebellion. So either way, there is something to the Star of David going back. You know, we say in the Haftorah, mugging David, in the Haftorah, so the concept of mugging David obviously is around, but in terms of it actually having the star, you know, so I've seen it go back to 11th century, etc. And that's a Ramosha says perhaps the six-sided star represents that, you know, God is all over. God is on all sides of us, etc. That's the part I made up. That is, you know, that's what it represents. So we see, so the flag itself represents the Mesiris Nefesh, all the Yidden who have given up their life al Kiddush Hashem to protect the land of Eretz Israel. The blue represents Doma, the Tchelas, Doma Rakia, that reminds us about, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the gift. And in fact, we'll conclude on this note. When people are probably wondering, Eretz Israel is surrounded by all these lands which are full of oil. Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq. And Eretz Israel is just a land flowing with milk and honey. What was God thinking there? He couldn't drop some oil into, even though now they're saying these shales over here, etc. And they say in the Negev, that's why Egypt wanted all that stuff in the Negev. They say there's a lot of stuff there. But well, God couldn't plant oil fields in Eretz Israel? Like, what's going on here? All the other nations around them. So again, you know, the answer perhaps, you know, no one knows for sure this answer, but I heard a very interesting answer based on the Ramban. But the Ramban writes in Parshas Bechukosai that within the Tochacha, it looks like it's a kola, but it's really a nechama, it's really a little bracha. That basically it says that the Goyim are going to try to build up the land of Eretz Yisrael, they're not going to be successful. Speak to the Brin, they brought the best scientists into pre-1948 to try to build up the land of Israel. It was a land full of malaria, swamps, they couldn't do anything. Let me ask you something, you think if it was a land full of oil fields, you think the Brin were going to give back this land to Eretz Israel? It was the Chasdei Hashem. He had to make it that it was totally desolate and only the Jewish people have the ability to build up the land. And believe me, they tried. And now you look, I go back every year, it's just amazing, all the Intels, the Cisco, all the high-tech people are coming down. The Israel passed Canada a couple of years ago, and the second biggest country have the most listed companies on the NASDAQ market. So we see, that was the Chasdei Hashem, even though we might think we wanted the oil, and it's too easy. Now it's okay, we find oil now. But the reason why we couldn't have oil is because we wouldn't have Eretz Yisrael today. So the Chas de Hashem is he made it. It's only that the Jewish people could build up Eretz Yisrael. And you know, there's you know some of the things that you know we could. It's a good time to think about. You know, this for Yom HaAtzmaut, it's enough. This for today, just to get you thinking about it. You want to pick another day. You don't like Heiyar. You can pick a different day. Just thinking of the Hakaras HaTov. It's always appropriate. The Chas Tei Hashem, you know, giving us Eretz Yisrael and all the, you know, no one's saying it's perfect. Nothing's ever perfect. But in terms of all the Torah that's going on, and focus on the good things. And we work on correcting the things that we don't like. So instead of talking about them, you know, we have to go in and, you know, and fix them ourselves. But that's what we have to remember, which is that every day is appropriate, but at least on Heiyar, which was the day, you know, whether you like the day or not, that was the day picked. And therefore, it's a day at least to ma'or us and think about all the Chas Tei Hashem and all the different people, all the Mesiras Nefesh of the people who have given up their lives, and the Chesed of HaKadosh Baruch and all things, but specifically now that we're Zocha, that we have Eretz Yisrael under Jewish control.